Press your button.
Now I did.
Council meeting take two. Did you press it? All right, we'll call the regular County Council Public Safety Committee meeting to order. And what's your pleasure with the minutes from the prior meeting?
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes of the prior meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carry. Okay, for the record, recognize Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Sheldon, Council President Bullock, Councilman Dave Tackett, Council President Pro Tem Penrose Hollins, Councilman George Smiley, and Councilman John Cordier.
We got a problem. I don't want to take care of it.
All right. I've been asked if we would kind of flip item 3 and 4. So unless anyone has any difficulties with that, we'll call upon Director Bryan and Colonel Setting.
Do you have to have a motion to go out of order?
Do you have to have a motion to go out of order?
Do it just to be safe.
I move that we go out of order.
Second.
Okay. Motion made and seconded to go out of order with item 3 and item 4 on the agenda for the County Council Public Safety Committee Tuesday, May 10th, 2016. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carry. Okay. Item number 4, our Police Hero Health Program. County Police. Colonel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Colonel Elmer Setting. I've talked a little bit about this in the past, but we're at the point where we are actually going to announce in a press conference. I would like to invite all of council. Obviously, the email's already been sent, but I personally would like to invite you to the press conference on Thursday, the 20th of May at 1 p.m., where we are going to announce Hero Health. We have had a lot of questions as to, you know, what it's going to do as far as operations to the department, because we're segueing away from putting people into a situation of incarceration. There's going to be an opportunity to help some people that meet the vetting process to get help. And we come across these people quite often. The Attorney General's office has indicated that they would prefer that anyone that we do put into the program is involved in a victimless crime. We were hoping to be able to drop some petty crime when someone was in a position to get help versus incarceration. But for right now, that's off the table, and I'm okay with that. So basically, the vetting process at its most basic level would be someone that's requesting help. It has to be completely voluntary. We have been given 10 beds by the state of Delaware. They would go through an evaluation process. They have to be nonviolent. Obviously, can't be anybody involved in a domestic or domestic assault. And it would have to be somebody that, again, wants to be in the program and is an adult. You can't walk your son in and say, Johnny has to go into this program. That's not what it's about. And we are trying to secure funding through the HIDA grants for the Vivitrol shots, which we believe will make the program successful, rather than having people lapse back into drug use. A Vivitrol shot would shut down opiate receptors for about 30 days straight. And that gives somebody, if they wanted to be in the program, 90 days clean. What we hear over and over again from the families of survivors that have lost family members is that they want help, they try to get help, and no one will help them. And I know 10 beds is a small step, but I believe it's a step in the right direction. And I just don't believe that incarceration is the answer in every scenario. And it doesn't seem to be helping very much with the opioid crisis that we're involved in. I'd like to start helping people versus what we're doing right now. We're still going to go after drug dealers. We still have officers embedded in the DEA, the FBI, U.S. Marshals. We're still going out with our mobile enforcement teams. We're still policing the high crime areas. We're still answering the 911 bell. This changes nothing. We're simply going to be able to identify some folks that are actually in need of help and are part of a victimless crime. We see these folks that we wake up from with a Narcan blast. They've literally killed themselves with heroin. You hit them with a Narcan blast, and you know, 1 in 5 says, I need help. I really need help. I think at the point that, right now what we tell them is, I'm really sorry, but that's not what we do. And we're at the point where we need to do something different. I'll take any questions that council may have.
Colonel, from our perspective, the department, did this initiative kind of take a grassroots from within our department, within the county? I mean, where did it evolve from?
Well, it's personal for me. I mean, I've seen what addiction does. I've seen it in my own family. The answer is not always, the problem of law enforcement is everything gets handed to us. So you have people that are homeless, but they're actually, many of them have mental illness. And we're going to arrest them because they're going to the bathroom outside. And that's not the answer to that. And incarceration isn't always the answer to this. So I had seen a chief in a northern American town that simply said, we're going to do the Angel program. He's from a much smaller town and a much smaller police department. I can't do that. I have 550,000 constituents. And he's promising anybody that walks through the door help. But I thought we could start somewhere and do something. And I was able to talk to Mike Barbieri and Rita Landgraf, which I owe a lot of credit to, my director of public safety, who endorsed this and said, yeah, I'm willing to try something that'll create value. And I said, well, we'll start somewhere. We'll start with 10 beds. If we're able to get even a couple of people through this program, I think they'll add beds to it. I think they'll add support. I think there's been a discussion between myself and President Bullock about, not just the STEP program, but there has to be some faith-based pieces to it. But the great thing about starting a new program is we take this grease board approach. We're going to change what doesn't work. We'll change what does work. We'll keep that, and we'll build a model that I think will be helpful. And it doesn't cost the county anything.
I think once again, shows the creativity, the proactiveness of your leadership, the staff in command of our public safety department in general, the director, certainly. It's a thing where, we all know that it's an epidemic, it's serious, but I think to take this type of approach, I think reflects back on everyone and very favorably, but I think the end result is trying to help people be able to help themselves and work with them. And you deserve a lot of credit for that, you and the director and the department and everyone involved. So
I appreciate it, sir. The goal was just that, see if we can help a couple of people. We know that if we put 10 people in 10 beds, we're going into this with the knowledge that 8 of them are going to walk out the door on the third day, and then they're going to leave. So if they leave and the warrants will be there, we've already, that's the old way of doing things. Sure, we could lock them up. We're not going to guard the doors. We're not going to do anything. And when we run across them next time, if they are wanted, they'll be arrested. Nothing's lost here. All we're simply saying is if they can make it to the end of a 90-day program, we're willing to drop, the possession charges. If they walk into headquarters and turn in, 10 bags of heroin, a usable amount of heroin and needles, we're not going to charge them. And, somebody walks in with a, they're wanted for a dozen burglaries and they have, we're still locking them up. Nothing's changing here. The only change is the folks that really want help, that are requesting help, might have an opportunity to get it.
Councilman Cartier.
Thank you. I want to strongly support this effort on the part of Newcastle County Police to attempt to deal with one subset of the heroin addiction population in a therapeutic manner rather than through law enforcement angle. I think it's creative, and I would like to know, as we proceed, what is the clinical success of the withdrawal treatment where you can actually eliminate the opiate receptor kind of drive to get high? I'm not clear about how all that works.
If you're on Vivitrol, we just met with Dr. Horton yesterday. He was a subject matter expert, in regards to not just opiates, but addiction in general. You can kill yourself with heroin by stuff. It'll still make your heart stop, but you can't get high. Your opiate receptors are shut down for those 30 days. It would take there would more likely, or opiates in general, would more likely stop your heart before you got high.
I just wanted to understand if this becomes an effective treatment modality that has maybe a higher success rate than the conventional or whatever other treatment modalities are out there.
Well, I'll tell you this, if you look in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, there are jurisdictions that are using Vivitrol upon release from prison. They just know that if they take away the desire or the ability to use opiates, the person has a chance of getting their life back together. So it's just expensive. A single dose of Vivitrol is going to be about $700. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get that money from HIDA. HIDA seems receptive to it. So we're working on that, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. President?
Thank you for your efforts. And when is the press conference again?
The 20th of May, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. 1,300 hours for you military folks.
Thanks again.
Sir.
Okay. Any other questions or comment? Okay. Thank you, Colonel.
Thank you,
appreciate
sir.
Appreciate it.
Motion to return to regular order of business.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carry. Okay, next on the agenda will be a brief presentation on the new box type ambulances by Chief Tan. Chief?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Larry Tan, Chief of Emergency Medical Services. Newcastle County has started to receive some box type transport capable ambulances as a part of their regularly scheduled fleet replacements. Essentially, they're the same as our other vehicles, with the exception that they have a stretcher and are physically able to transport patients if necessary. As we have said to the fire service and to our own personnel, we are not changing the way we do business. We are continuing to respond in a tiered response system with, in Wilmington, the contracted ambulance service provider, and in the county with the volunteer fire service that provides that basic life support service. Newcastle County EMS has always had a small contingent of transport capable vehicles within our fleet. Typically we use them for special operations as well as for contractual duty assignments. At least one of the paramedic units in Wilmington has had a transport capable ambulance, simply because to get two vehicles in the station, one of them has to be an ambulance. And they have responded both in the city as well as out in the county with no issues. So we're not changing the way we do business. We're still using it in a tiered response fashion. But we get to a situation where we are having difficulty finding a transport capable ambulance, it gives us some backup. Some of the considerations when we looked at that include the fact that the volunteer fire service is certainly using the personnel that they're paying to staff their ambulance to ride fire apparatus as well. It's basically a daily occurrence that if a particular station has a fire response, that they'll put the ambulance in out of service and put the personnel on the fire truck to handle that particular response. If you get a major event, a multi-alarm fire, major type of extended operation, it's not uncommon in those circumstances that you could have a whole area of the county that has all of the ambulance personnel working in fire, in a fire suppression type of role. A couple of years ago, in looking at preparations for potential pandemic flu issues, one of the concerns that you look at, in addition to the potential spike in the number of patients that you would see within an EMS system, the other consideration is the National Security Council was working on an assumption that 40% of a workforce could be affected by the pandemic for up to 2 weeks during the peak of an actual pandemic issue. That would certainly affect our personnel, would certainly affect the fire service, and we may have to change operations during that type of a public health emergency to stretch resources out. So it basically gives the EMS system in Newcastle County some added patient transfer capability. It's a good fail-safe. We didn't want to be in a situation where we had a patient that needed to get to a hospital and for a variety of reasons. If there was difficulty in finding a transport-capable ambulance, at least we have that backup intrinsically.
Councilman Cartier?
Yes, I'm very reassured to hear this discussion about the box-type ambulance. I had an inquiry from Brandywine Fire Company and was able to talk to the president, Richard Prillo, the company, and then to get reassurance from you today is great. And I understand the need for you know, having backups and you know, redundancy seems, you know, like a wise thing to have. And if we're going to have additional vehicles, we're going to add to the fleet, you know, have some with the transport capability, makes a lot of sense. So I don't know if there was a communications gap somehow with that particular fire president, or I wonder if you could just comment on the briefing process with the volunteer fire service.
We have actually been making statements about the fact that they were on order since throughout 2015 at the various fire service association meetings, as well as the Fire and Ambulance Advisory Board. So this really shouldn't be a surprise. And again, as we've told the fire service, this is no different than when a paramedic unit uses the current ambulances we have in our fleet. We haven't changed the way we do business. They just show up in a vehicle that has a stretcher in the back. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Chief, how many were actually ordered and have been delivered to date?
We have 9 that have been ordered.
9?
Yes, sir. And okay. I believe 4 have actually been delivered. I think by the time we get all 9 in with the existing vehicles, transport-capable vehicles that we had, we'll probably have about 12 in the fleet that have transport capability. Okay.
And those 9, are they replacements, or are they in addition to, because we just saw the request for proposals on the quick response vehicles.
They are. They're replacements. We are replacing vehicles one for one. As I said earlier, it's a part of our regular scheduled fleet replacement. So these are replacing other vehicles.
So these 9 are replacing box-type units or units in general?
They're combination. I think one of the first ones in replaced an ambulance that was really old that we felt we wanted to take out of service. In other cases, it's replacing response trucks. So it's a combination. Usually what we do with fleet services, when we get a delivery, we sit down with fleet services and we look at our fleet and say, okay, what is the current state of the fleet? Do we have a particular problem vehicle that needs a high dollar repair that probably doesn't make sense if we're going to deadline it? So we'll make those adjustments based on in conjunction with the maintenance shop.
In light of the fact that you have 9 ordered, 4 already delivered, will this reduce the number of the quick response vehicles that you're going out to, you know, with the proposal?
Yes. In our total inventory, some of the quick response vehicles will be replaced by transport capable ambulances. So we're not increasing the size of the fleet. We're doing one for one replacement as a part of our scheduled replacement.
Okay. Mr. President,
Chief, what do you do with the vehicles you replace?
Vehicles that are deadlined, typically the county will put out to bid as surplus property. We have at least one vehicle that has been designated to be used as a spare by the Volunteer Fire Service. The fire service approached the county executive about possibly having a loaner vehicle that could be used as a pool for the Volunteer Fire Service when somebody is in need of an ambulance. The executive has agreed to that, and the way we're making that happen is one of the vehicles that we've deadlined is going to be prepared as a fire service for the fire service to use. But otherwise, the other vehicles, they're typically stripped, they're placed out for auction, and they're open for purchase through the bid process.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
I guess I'll just make this comment, and I think that it does bear at least hearing and I think being aware of. As we all know, you know, you have 21 volunteer fire departments, all provide emergency medical care. The majority do have either full-time or part-time paid personnel. And I understand that there are going to be circumstances where there may be an incident or a fire, but I think at the same time, I think we've got to balance this process so that we don't send a message to our volunteer basic life support that our county EMS has gone into transport business. And the reason I say that is because, you know, the volunteers are doing a pretty good job right now with responding and transporting. And, you know, I don't know whether you have any specific situation where you couldn't move a patient, but I think we've got to be careful that we don't send the wrong message that all of our units are going to be transport capable and if you go out of business tomorrow, we're here. We need to keep them in business because we really can't afford, this government can't afford a fully paid emergency medical care system. And so I just mention that because it is a sensitive note, and I think that, you know, some of the things that you hear out on the street, and sometimes it's just rumor, but I don't think we want to get into the thing where we replace all the quick response vehicles with box-type units and like I say, upset the apple cart.
I don't think that has been the intent at all. In fact, what we have reported to the fire service associations is that we are not changing the way we do business.
Okay.
We are certainly, with a total of 12 vehicles, we are not replacing or making the entire system 100% transport capable. We're going to maintain our dual fleet. The intent is probably half the medic units at any given time will probably be transport capable, but won't be the same ones throughout their entirety. So, not sure where the rumor, as you put it, that we're trying to take over transport capability ever came out. Not our intent. We have reiterated over and over again that we are not changing the way we do business. And again, Medicaid has had a transport capable ambulance for years. Certainly St. Francis is the contracted BLS provider in Wilmington, does the transports. When Medicaid goes out into the county, whatever fire company is there does the transports. So we look at that as being few and far between, but again, it's a contingency if necessary.
Councilwoman.
Thank you. I'm happy to hear your comments because that's exactly what went through my mind several months ago when the RFP came out and it said that we were replacing with 9 ambulances, knowing that we have always said we weren't in the transport business. I think that's the logical conclusion that of many in the fire company and that I came to when I first saw that RFP.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Director, I'm sorry.
Director Joe Bryant. When we started this process 2 years ago, we met with the advisory council, fire and ambulance, and we told them to their faces, this is what the plan was. We were not trying to take over their business. It's like us being proactive just in case something happens. We weren't going into the transport business. We're not going to take money out of your pockets. None of that. And I'm not sure who all were there, but the room was filled. When I was there on at least 3 occasions, we went to the meetings at these different fire stations where you have all the fire companies represented. We made it clear to them, we're not going to interfere with the way you do business. And I never got any negative feedback from any of them. And I've talked to them on a number of occasions about a number of things. As a matter of fact, they came to me and asked about one of our surplus vehicles, Davis Godak, who is the president of Fire Services.
The fire chief.
And we talked about it. We talked about that issue, as well as him getting this surplus vehicle. He had no complaints, no concerns. So if the rumor's out there, then if you hear it, have them come talk to myself or Chief Tan, and we will make it clear to them what our objective is and was when we decided to go this route.
Not a problem. Mr. President Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chief Tan, how does this box ambulance application help us to provide better medical service to the citizens of New Mexico County?
Well, I mean, the paramedics are typically going on the higher acuity or for the patients that may have time-critical emergencies. And really, it provides us with a backup that if we have a patient who is in extreme difficulty and for whatever reason we're not able to get another transport-capable ambulance, we have the ability to call for either the medic unit that has one and initiate that transport. It gives us that backup capability.
So is that a challenge for us now before we...
It has been on isolated occurrences, but I mean, so far the fire service has been able to maintain a level of coverage. But again, as we look at the public health emergencies that were being planned for, as well as the fact that the fire service is struggling to maintain their staffing, we just wanted to have contingencies in place.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Do you want me to ask how much?
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Can you just tell us what the difference in prices between the standard truck that you have versus the ambulance truck?
Sure. A transport-capable ambulance under county bid is probably about $166,000. One of our response trucks without a stretcher is probably somewhere around $138,000, $139,000.
So $30,000 difference, basically.
Yeah.
And we're hitting nine. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions? Chief, do you have anything else to report? Academy going well, still graduating on time?
Academy is probably through week six. They're in week seven at this point, so they should be finishing up the EMT portion of the program. We're waiting for the results on that. They'll then sit for their, I think, the Pennsylvania EMT exam and the National Registry exam, and then they'll start moving into the paramedic portion of the curriculum at the end of this month. So, progress.
Everybody hang in there? Nobody dropped?
We've probably got one person that's having a lot of difficulties, so we'll see if they can make it into the final bubble.
Diversity numbers in this class?
Actually, you know, if you had asked me that during the budget, I could have given it to you. I would say a little less than half are women. I believe 34% diversity, which includes, I think, four African Americans, a Hispanic gentleman, and believe an American Indian. They you know, out of 17. So it's you know, I wish you'd asked me that during the budget. I could have given it right to you. So here,
study up on it.
Yes, sir.
Memorex. Okay, if there are no other questions from council, we appreciate you coming in, Chief, and appreciate the report. Anything under other council? Hearing nothing under other, any public comment or input? Okay,
motion
hearing.
Adjourned.
Motion made, seconded to adjourn. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried.
Yeah,